Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hi everyone, welcome to episode 2 of the Self-Help Podcast. We're back for more. Say hello, Sean.
Hi everybody, good to be back again.
It certainly is. Yeah, we're getting the hang of this. If you like what you hear on this show, we'd be really grateful if you could head over to iTunes and leave a review for us. A birdie told me that it's really important in the rankings if you have lots of reviews, especially if they're good reviews. So,
well, I could write a good review, Ed. Do you think I should?
I think you should. I think we're going to have to. I think if you scroll through the reviews, hopefully there'll be lots of them, so you can do that. You'll see the first 2 or 3 will be Edward Lamb, Sean Orford, Ree Orford,
yeah.
And then brothers and sisters, friends and family, yeah. And then all of our...
the rest of the world.
Adoring fans will follow. Yeah. Yeah, if you could leave a review, that would be amazing. It would really help out. And if you do leave a 5-star review, we will mention your name, if you want us to, on next week's show. So, yeah, that would be brilliant. But let's crack on. What's coming up this week? Well, we're going to talk a little bit about what we've been up to, both in our personal lives and what's kind of caught our attention in the world. Lots going on, as always. And now we're going to move on to our weekly topic, which is a biggie this week. We're talking about anxiety, which has affected, I'm sure, everyone pretty much worldwide to a certain extent. Some more than others, but it's a huge issue, right, Sean?
Yeah, enormous. The biggest, really.
Okay, and we'll have about 15, 20 minutes to crack it.
I could be talking all day on anxiety.
Yeah, so okay.
You have to shut me up.
We'll do some DVD extras or something.
Okay.
Maybe. We'll see. But yeah, let's get going, Sean. So do you want to talk a little bit about what's going on in your world?
Yeah, I've had a good week. I'm into the idea of spring. So every lunchtime I've been going out and enjoying the idea that spring is sprunging all around me.
Spring is sprunging.
And things are bursting into bud. I thought we'd lost all the apple buds, but the apple buds are around on the trees where I am. And I was out in the woods yesterday and took some lovely pictures of bluebells, that the bluebells have actually come out late spring.
Yeah.
And today it is pouring with rain. I'm going to build an ark tonight because it's raining so much. And the forecast is it's going to rain for quite a while yet. And I'm thinking, where's my summer? I want some summer. I think that I'm going to have to move south in the summer rather than stay here. It's just too wet. Driving me mad.
Well, maybe, you know, should the weather affect us that much? This is going to be another episode,
yeah.
I can think.
Yeah,
Why do we get miserable when it's raining? You know?
Yeah.
There's no need to.
I wonder whether the issue is not miserable with the rain, but happy with the sun.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, sunlight.
The weather's a big one in Britain, isn't it?
Yeah,
obviously,
it is.
We're going out worldwide here, so let's not be too local, but...
Yeah. No, when you're British, you always talk about the weather. You go into a bar, and the first thing you say to the person next to you is, oh, the weather's bad, isn't it? It's too wet, too dry, too windy, too cold, too hot. There's always something.
It's wet out today. But luckily we recorded the sunshine episode last week when it was quite nice.
No, it was good. Yeah.
It would have been a bit tricky this week.
So if the sun's shining for you, then just spare a thought for us in the rain here.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. So anything else going on in your life, Sean?
I'm working towards the idea of doing another 30-day detox program.
Clearing out your system, yeah.
Yeah, that goes up on the site, and we have a little e-book that we use for that. And if anyone's interested in joining me on the detox...
You usually do that in January, though, don't you?
Yeah, I'm just feeling like maybe if I have a good detox, it'll bring the summer on. I'm feeling like I need a good cleaner, a good exercise.
Yeah.
And a good detox.
Let us know. Are we going to be starting it in the next week? Or
No, it'll be a couple of weeks away.
We'll let people know so we can people can follow along, because it's... I haven't been through that process, but...
You should.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, what have I been doing? Well, I've had my head kind of buried in my laptop, working hard. Although, I've been out and about this week doing some training with a couple of clients, teaching them how to update their websites and also how to use some software on their computers, iMovie and iPhoto, which is, you know, really quite, well, basic software that comes when you buy a Mac.
We should be doing iPodcast, shouldn't we?
Yeah, maybe.
Video.
Yeah, maybe.
I'd have to dress then.
But
that doesn't mean I'm naked. I mean, just you know what I mean.
I got you. But yeah, so I've been teaching, basically, which I quite enjoy, you know, really. I can see one day further down the line, you know, doing more of that kind of thing. It's good fun.
Maybe you'll be doing TED Talks.
Or maybe.
Ed on TED.
Ed on TED, maybe.
Yeah.
That'd be a good little goal, maybe. We'll see how it goes. Yeah, and also, of course, my karting obsession goes on and on. I spent my weekend kind of wet and muddy in a field down the road or by the side of a track as my friend thrashed our kart around in our first race. We did okay. We crashed out, sadly, in the grand final, but he was nudged out. But
I need to just intervene in that one. Having seen a client this week who's had spinal damage from doing too much karting.
Right.
And you need suspension in your seat.
Okay.
So
I'll see if we can add something in or even
you need something in there. That, yeah. Save your backside for posterity.
Okay. Because you're only as young as your spine, right?
Yes. That's your... Yeah, and you only get one backside. Yeah. So you need to, yeah.
Cool. But what about the news then, Sean? I mean, what's caught your eye this week?
A couple of things, really. The first one was Angelina Jolie, with her coming out and talking about how she's had a double mastectomy. And that feeds into lots of things that are to do with today's topic, which is anxiety as well.
Yeah.
I deal with many people that have cancer issues, and very often those issues or the anxiety around those issues are based in what's going on in their genetics and their family, and the fear of what's going to happen next. And it reminded me of a client I worked with a few years ago where everybody in her family had died from breast cancer, all her aunts, uncles, no, her uncles, her aunts, her mothers and sisters. And the consultant had asked to talk to her and had said to her that he needed to do a double mastectomy, and the issues for her and her life were huge, obviously. And the idea that someone like Angelina Jolie has come out and done that is such a powerful statement for other women. And the effects of that, the ramifications, aren't clear yet, but I'm sure it will have an enormous effect on people. But that's
yeah, the news. It's pretty brave. I mean, obviously she's anxious about something that's coming up. Probably 87% chance, she said, in the future, but she's taking positive action.
And she's down to 5% now.
Wow.
Yeah, which is a hell of a difference, yeah.
Yeah,
it's... The other thing is that there's a really nice DVD around, you get it on iTunes, and it's a book also called Freakonomics. Mm. And one of the things that caught me in that was the idea of, can you change the way that somebody is by their name? And that was just a fascinating idea. So there's a family, and they call the two kids, one's called Winner and the other one's called Loser. And the way that it turned out was that Winner became an absolute criminal and Loser became a business hero. And I was fascinated by the story in this and wondering whether the fact that the guy was called Loser changed his motivations.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, and I'm interested in the idea of names that we use, which are very, very powerful, but also the idea of the mix of nature-nurture. And in The New Scientist, there was an article on some research that fascinated me as well, which was about if you take identical twins and you track them, you can start to see that their genomes, their genetic structures, are changing from word one by what they learn. We know that we change genes change from what we learn. But that idea of is it nature or nurture, and it's very, very clearly showing that whatever genetic starting point you have, you can change it. You can change it dramatically.
Wow.
And that's very much about the work that we do in Live in the Present. It's like, what do you want? You know, you can change and become what you want, even at that cellular level. Amazing. Love that research. How about you?
Okay. Well, I'm just going to talk briefly about... I'm a bit of a space nut, a bit of a geek. So I've been in heaven this week, or the last few weeks, because Chris Hadfield, Canadian astronaut, who's been up in the space station, and he's been... For the last few weeks, he's been tweeting pictures back from, how many hundred miles? Is it 200-300 miles up the space station? It's not actually as far away as you might think.
Yeah, but it's far enough.
It's far enough, yeah.
It's a long way if you fall out.
So that's just been insane. Technology is just so cool. You know, people have a go at social networks like Twitter and Facebook. Yes, they can be a bore and they can take over your lives, but they can be used for really powerful things. So we've got this guy who's got this amazing perspective on Earth, sharing it with the world. You think he's got up to about 1 million followers now.
Well,
he's due back, or he's just come back, crashed back down to Earth. He's safe and sound. But just before he did, he published a video on YouTube, a cover version of a David Bowie song, which we'll put that in the show notes. But the video was all stuff he'd... Because he had a guitar up there with him as well.
Well.
He had a guitar up there, which you'll like, Sean. Just amazing, amazing. I think he actually got his son to do the editing, but obviously he's had to get the video back down to Earth somehow, sending it down via the web. Cool.
Clever.
So cool.
Clever.
Yeah, so clever. I've been following that with great interest this week.
So you're going to be the first one up in Richard Branson's...
I'd like to. Well, when we did the courses those few years ago, the 10 Steps courses, Sean, which has become Live in the Present now, for those interested, one of my goals was to go to space one day, and it still is. Whether Virgin Galactic is the way, because it'll change, but at the moment, if you put your $200,000 down or whatever it is, you get about 5 minutes in zero G. It's sort of just on the edge of space. It's not really space because you can't see like all of the Earth in their ship. It's still amazing, like fair dues.
Yeah.
But I'm sure in 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
I also follow a guy called Elon Musk. I don't know if you know him. He's entrepreneur number one in the world. He's incredible. He sold PayPal back 10 years ago.
Right.
And since then he's made SpaceX, which he's built rockets. He's got Tesla. He builds electric cars.
Right.
And Solar City. He's got some solar energy company going on the go. Just one of these guys. How do they do it, man? Sometimes, like Steve Jobs, they've just got the knack, haven't they?
They live in the present.
That's they do.
Yeah.
He's one of my heroes. But hey, yeah, I'll get to space one day. Do you fancy it?
Yeah. I'll be with you. I'll pack my sandwiches.
One-way ticket or would you want to come back?
I don't know. I'm going to get there first.
See what you think.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, let's move on to our topic of the week. Anxiety. It's a biggie. Sean, do you want to start maybe by defining anxiety? I know that's kind of a tricky thing to do because it's a loose term maybe, but what does anxiety mean from a professional therapist?
There's two sides to anxiety, really. One is the neurological stuff, which is when we start to use medication, we're changing what's going on in people's brains. And the other bit is the psychological stuff, which is about looking at the relationship between the mind and the brain. This is one of my big things, is mind-brain therapies are very, very effective because at one end you're working on the meat of the body, which is the brain. At the other end, you're working on the mind of the system, which is the psychology. And it's the interaction between those two which creates the world of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's almost as though the meat is actually unconscious and the mind is consciousness. And when unconsciousness and consciousness come together, then we have the world of experience, the phenomenal world.
Yeah.
So that's all a bit kind of esoteric and weird in some ways. From we can look at it in two ways. If you look at it first of all psychologically, that what happens is that our issue about living in the present, the reason that we do that is that if you start to be attached to and keep looking at the past, then you become depressed. It's a depressive issue. If you've got negative attachments to the past, you can't let go. They would drag you down. Anxiety is the reverse. It's when we project forward into futures that may never happen, and then we live those in the present. Beautiful creativity and wonderful forethought is the same thing, but we live a wonderful feeling in the present. No problems with that. It's when we project forward into negativity and then start living that in the present. Yep. And the issue usually is that right here, right now, in this moment, you listening to this, Ed and I sat here, we're safe, we're secure, nothing can hurt us, nothing can harm us, we're fine. And yet, if we pull stuff in from the past, we're depressed. If we worry about the future, we become anxious. Whereas if we live in the present, we're fine.
Yep.
Yeah? So that's the psychological bit, and it's to do with being able to train your mind to be in the present. And we've been doing blogs recently up on the site, I mean, about ways that we live in the present.
Yeah.
Ed's done one, I've done one, and we're going to have redoing one this week.
Yeah, it's going to be up in the next few days. Yeah. Or by the time this goes out, certainly.
Yeah. So that idea about what is it that we do, what is it that you do to live in the present is very, very important. If you start to look at it at a brain level, which is the other bit, is right in the middle of your brain is the limbic system, which is the emotional part. within the limbic system is a little organ called the amygdala, and in the amygdala are emotional templates. What that means is that there are collections of cells that identify certain feelings, and when they become activated, I like to think of them as becoming hot, when they become hot, they release the chemistry which is related to that particular anxious emotion. So that the example would be, if when I'm a kid, I watch my mother jumping around going ooh, wah, wah with spiders, I build a template in my amygdala so that when I see spiders, that template becomes hot, releases the chemistry, and I go ooh, wah, wah too.
Yeah, yeah, there's a cool, just hopping in, this show I saw years ago, maybe it's on YouTube, I'll try and find it, The Anatomy of Disgust, and that on this show, they did this experiment with some kids where they had some sterilised cockroaches, dead cockroaches, obviously, and they gave them to kids of various ages. Obviously, now the kids of kind of 1-2 years old picked them up, no worries, put them in their mouth, chucked them around, no worries at all. I think it got to the age of like 4 or 5, and then the kids wouldn't go near them. They just wouldn't touch them. They were, you know, as you and I probably would. Or I wouldn't. I don't like cockroaches all that much. So yeah, what's the point? Because it seemed to be a similar kind of age for a lot of kids.
Well, from word one, we come out of the womb and we're learning, and depending on the kinds of experiences that we have, we're going to develop different emotional templates. So the idea of someone who is amazingly happy and is having a really good time, they have happy templates in their amygdala, because the emotional templates in the amygdala cover all ranges of emotions. So if I see the object of my love, then that template becomes hot, I go googly, and I feel that wonderful chemistry. But everything that we do has associated feelings. I mean, one of the things that we were talking about earlier before we went on air was the idea of anxiety and happiness. And one of the things that's important to realise is that if two people jump out of a plane and one is having absolute ecstasy and going, wee, as they jump out of the plane, and the other one's having terror and, oh my God, I don't want to do this, the chemistry in their system is the same. It's the same chemistry, but the thing is that the mind part, the emotional part, labels that chemistry differently. So the things that may excite you may scare the willies out of me.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And beginning to realise this relationship between mind and brain, and then if we're mindful in the present, living in the present, we can start to take control of it. And that for me is the biggest issue, because 60% of people that go to a physician because they've got anxiety. And very often what happens is the doctor is trained to work at the brain end, so they reach for the prescription pad and give you antidepressants.
Which is just a sticking plaster, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not going to...
Yeah, it's not...
Long-term effect.
Yeah, it doesn't change what's going on in the mind part.
Yep.
And if you change the mind part, which is both thoughts and feelings, then you change the brain chemistry. Yeah. Now, inevitably, there are people that in their bodies have a kind of dysfunction. So we know that if someone's pancreas doesn't work, then they're going to be diabetic, they need insulin. If their thyroid doesn't work, they need thyroxine. We know this, so that we give people stuff. And there are people that in the middle of their brain, around the pituitary gland, have a dysfunction that means that they need serotonin enhancers, which are antidepressants.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the amount of people that need that are very, very few.
Well, one of my questions to ask then, there are obviously various ends of the spectrum in anxiety, you know.
Yeah.
Happy-go-lucky Ed here.
Yeah.
You know, I suffer from anxiety probably on a low scale, but it's still there for me, you know, every now and again, whether it be, I don't know, worrying about how I'm going to pay the mortgage next month or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's obviously a huge range. Could you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, okay. Anxiety at the bottom end is completely normal. It's as it should be, and it's the thing that's protected us throughout our evolution. Without anxiety, we'd be so stupid, we'd keep walking up to lions and being eaten. We have to understand that the parts of the world are dangerous. That's how we learn. Yeah. Anxiety disorder is when that starts to step out of line. Yeah. What we talk about as fight and flight is when we're under threat in some way, so that the adrenal system kicks off. We get the cortisol, the noradrenaline, we get all the chemistry that kicks off that creates this state of anxiety. That particular kick-off of chemistry in a normal situation, we would either hit the thing that was threatening, so we'd run away. so that we burn that chemistry off. What happens in our society if we're threatened by something? Then we get all the chemistry, but we don't get rid of it. So that chemistry is now flooding around our system. Our heart's beating, our respiration's up, skin's moist. And one of the problems with that is it leads to things like hardened arteries that lead to things like dementia later in life. Is that if we don't get rid of that chemistry, it's actually quite damaging to us.
If I think about the moments when I've been most anxious in my whole life, it's probably back at school, before exams. I was awful in that situation, you know, which is why I think it's a really rubbish way of learning, having, like, standardised testing, for me anyway, because I was just so nervous throughout the whole, whatever, 2-3 hour exam. I can feel it now. It's just horrible.
There's two things that you've just demonstrated that are really important. Like, the first thing is that if we start to project forward in a way that creates anxiety for us, we're actually building forward memory. So that if we're going into an exam, we can actually visualise the fear and the terror and the panic. That's what we're going to experience. One of the things about visualisation therapy is that if you build forward memory by visualising the situation that you do want, the perfect interview, the perfect exam, the perfect driving test, whatever, you're starting to create a forward memory that allows your chemistry to go with that. And that's really, really important to understand the power of visualisation. The second thing that you just said was, and that was really, really important, was you said, I can feel it now. Mm. And what that is, it's the understanding that the brain cannot actually tell whether the things that we're scared about are happening around us or whether we're visualising them.
Wow.
So that I can sit here now in the safety of the situation with you and I can start to visualise things that scare me and then I can start to have all the physiological responses.
We should have me wired up now to one of those brain monitor things.
Yeah. Well, respiration, heart rate, skin moisture.
Yeah.
And you can start to see it rising. All you need to do is get someone to talk about and to visualise things that scare the willies out of them. And the anxiety levels come up.
But on the reverse, obviously, you can... Well, we've talked about
visualisation. Yeah. You can calm it right down.
And think about positive things. I think there's even research into where if you visualise yourself exercising...
Yeah,
the heart rate starts going up, and there's like a small percentage benefit in that.
There is some research, and I can't validate it, but there is some research that women have been shown to be able to increase the size of their breasts using visualisation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know. It'd be an interesting experiment.
We'll have
to go into that.
Some research to be done there.
Yeah. But the power of visualisation as a tool is something that we don't yet know. We don't understand. And if you think about any of the people that we've been talking about today, whether it's Steve Jobs or Richard Branson, each of those people have created the worlds around them by visualising what they were going to do next. You know, the guy sells PayPal, goes on and creates electric cars, Solar City, that he can visualise it and then goes forward and does it. It's a really, really powerful part of our personalities. It's really the thing that has created the whole of human development. The problem with anxiety is we use that bit of us to create negative futures, not positive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's understanding that. If you look at the amygdala, just winding up on that bit, is that with the templates are in there, the more you visit them, the hotter they become. So someone who has anxiety levels when they are a teenager, by the time they get into their 60s, they're going to be peaking right out the window unless they do something about it. So anxiety and amygdala-based templates always get hotter over time, always gets worse. Yeah, but a template usually takes about 5 repetitions to build in. When you're doing therapy, it takes 5 repetitions to desensitise the template, and you can do that. And the thing that I do that with most is people that have post-traumatic stress disorder. So one of my jobs would be to deal with train drivers that have run people over, and they've got a lot of negative imagery in their mind because they've just seen it and had to deal with the mess on the track.
Powerful, wow.
Yeah, and then being able to desensitise those templates. It's a process called rewinding. Anybody can Google rewinding and they could see the kind of work I'm doing with that. But you can rewind any template, and any emotional template could be hurt, loss, grief, bereavement, jealousy, anxiety, panic, anger, whatever's going on, you can desensitise it and you can take control of your anxiety.
And things like, I've got written down here, phobias, social disorder, anxiety. And well, OCD as well.
Yeah, yeah. But the, one of the things, loads of work on using mindfulness practice, which is the live in the present stuff, with things like OCD, with bipolar disorders, and how you can get the symptoms down. I mean, amazing. I could give you a million examples of people that I've worked with.
Give us
where
one.
Where we've changed.
Just one. But, one out of time.
Okay, simple one. A guy comes to me. And he's got a body tick, got a head tick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And what happens is that in the mindfulness therapy is he learns to reassociate the template in his amygdala, which is to do with ticking, to the muscles in his body and his emotional states. And over a period, it took us 4 months. And after 4 months, he could sit there completely still without ticking. And he did his exam successfully.
Exam? Was he anxious about the exam?
It was the exam. It was, yeah. That was your one. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But the main message is that anxiety is a learned response. It's not a state. People will say to me, no, that's just me. That's just the way that I am. It's not true.
It can be fixed.
Yeah, it can be fixed. If you can't get rid of it 100%, you can take it down 90%.
Well, like you say, we need anxiety to some extent because it, you know,
it
pushes us on for things, you know.
Yeah.
I'm anxious about how I'm going to pay the mortgage, so I go out and I speak to people to get some work on in. Yeah. So, yeah, there's kind of positives to anxiety as well, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's how do you label that, isn't it? Do you label that anxious need to go and sort yourself out as motivation? And that's like, woo, let's go and get on with it. Or do you label that as, oh, my God?
Yeah, I relish it. I look forward to going out and chatting to people and meeting you guys. Yeah. So, okay, that was interesting. That was good. I'm getting anxious about the time now because we're on 26, nearly 27 minutes.
I told you I'd speak all day. If you didn't show me.
I'm sure. Well, we'll post up in the show notes some links to some articles where people can read on. If anyone's got any thoughts of their own, leave some comments in the show notes or below the show notes to perhaps experiences you've had or to some things that we can all learn about.
One of the things that I just say on the end of that is that we haven't touched the ideas of sleep, and maybe sleep is a whole session, an episode on its own.
Yeah. So good night's sleep is important.
And the relationship between anxiety and sleep is quite profound.
Okay.
Yeah,
some people get anxious about not getting enough sleep, so they're anxious before they're even in bed, right? So, we could talk for a while about that, and we will. Book or a resource of the week, Sean? What's caught your imagination, or what do you want to talk about?
I've been looking at something called The Green Pharmacy, and we'll put that up on the site. The Green Pharmacy offers alternatives to chemical medications. And I'm quite fascinated by that. My main interest came from the idea of seeing so many people that do have anxiety disorders taking St. John's wort rather than taking traditional chemical antidepressants and anxiety controllers. But it's a fascinating read, and it shows you lots of alternatives. And it's a good book. It's written by a doctor, and there's lots of research-based material in it. So it's not kind of off the wall. Good stuff. Good read.
Green Pharmacy. Okay, yeah. And I'm going to talk briefly about my resource. I'm going to talk about Lyft, which is an app for iPhone.
I'm using it. It's good.
You're on it?
Yeah,
okay. Sadly, it's not on Android yet. I'm sure it will be at some point. I think you can get it on the web now as well, or that's in beta, so that's almost ready. Really simple little idea. It's an app for kind of building good habits and cementing them in your mind. So you log in, you create an account, and you set up a list of habits that you want to work on and improve. And each day you log in, you see the habits that you want to do, and when you've done it in that day, you tick the box for it. And then over time, you start to build these graphs of how many times per week you've done it, and you can hopefully see some improvement.
And you can share it with other people.
The social side of things is where it's different, I guess, because it's not just a to-do list. People can kind of give you a thumbs up for doing it in a day. You can make a comment about that particular habit.
Well, I've got a sneaky thing going, see, because I use it with some clients now. Ah. So I've got clients on programs.
Wow.
And we link in together so that we're actually working together to make sure that those change processes are going on.
That's cool. I mean, the app's built by one of the guys, I think, or it's that made Twitter. So he did Twitter, and then he got out of that, made his millions, and they've invested money in this little company called Lyft. And it's actually interesting, that if you follow the guys on Twitter that make Lyft, they're always posting cool articles and little ways to improve your habits and stuff. So the support behind it as well is awesome. Yeah. Lyft, get it for your iPhone, for your iPad.
Good.
And get on it. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for listening, everyone. I've been Edward Lamb. That was Sean Ufford talking. Thanks for your time, Sean. You are still.
Yeah.
To find out more about the work that we're doing, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk, where you can also access the show notes from this week's and previous week's episodes. You can also download lots of interesting stuff from our website, including a free ebook that we've made. There's meditation files, there's all sorts on there. There's weekly blogs that we do. Yeah, get involved. Again, if you could leave a review on iTunes for us for this week's show or any others, that would be amazing. It would really help us out. But there's links to that in the show notes as well as to how you can do that. Next week, we're going to be talking about, is the world a safe place? So that's going to be an interesting one. Briefly, Sean, do you want to mention do you think the world's a safe place? Yes or no?
Yes. I think that it's people that experience it as not safe.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. Looking forward to recording that. Okay, thanks everyone. I've been Ed Lamb. That was Sean Orford.
And we'll see you. Take care.
Bye. See you again soon. Thanks a lot.